Hi guys, welcome to a new episode of the Bids Mumbai podcast show. I am Ratul and I will be your host for today's episode. The Women in Data Science Initiative, abbreviated as WIDS, aims to inspire and educate data scientists worldwide, regardless of gender, and to support women in the field of technology. WIDS Mumbai is an independent event organized by WIDS ambassadors to coincide with the annual Global Women in Data Science Conference held at Stanford University. You can find more information about WIDS Mumbai on our website. Our WIDS Mumbai podcast series will feature local data scientists talking about their work, their journey, and their lessons learned along the way. Hope you enjoy the podcast. All right. We have Mrs. Deepa Nayak with us today as part of the Mumbai WIDS session. And she is the founder of Cogitari. It's a data science platform enabling, specifically on cognitive analytics. And she's also part of the Humans from AI, the Mumbai chapter. And today we'll be talking more about how she's gotten to this journey and what are the tips, etc., that she has for all of us. And over to you, Mrs. Nayak. And just want to know, how did you begin with this journey, in the sense, how did you start off with data science and how did it really attract you throughout, what is your field, beginning with the field of technology?
Thank you very much, Ratul, and thanks for having me here today, especially the WIDS Mumbai team. My interaction with you guys has always been very nice, very enthusiastic bunch of people. So thank you for having me here. In terms of my introduction, I think you already gave, and then let me just talk about it once again. I am a founder of a company, Cogitari, which we are in our consulting space, and we are a consulting and research company actually. So our research is basically in terms of the artificial intelligence, cognitive, and in terms of a consulting, we are into HR technology space. So it's a domain come analytics come AI company, if you can call it, more in the consulting space. And the other thing, my passion apart from technology is somewhere down the line in this 2 odd decades, I think I need to go give back to the society. And that is where I founded a non-profit, which is Humans for AI. Our mission is to have AI literacy all over the globe. So I lead the India chapter, but we have chapters across the globe, headquartered in the US. And our main mission is to get a diverse audience. Okay, so not just the tech folks, but when I say diverse, we want the MBA folks, people from the domain, we want gender diversity, and we want actually everybody. So it's more of, in the education space. So for me as a person, I think as a technologist primarily, which is my passion, and somewhere where I want to give things back to the world, right? And that is where the education part comes in. To talk more in terms of how I started, my graduation actually is in statistics. Okay, so I am a bachelor's in statistics and then a master's in business. And I'm talking 20 odd years ago when statistics wasn't as glamorous as it is today. And my second year, I got into a math talent program at IIT Powai for 2 months. Okay, and this is a turning point in my life, so I wanted to share it. Right? And this 2 weeks at IIT Powai, interacting with a lot of people in statistics and mathematics, and I was a junior most. I was at a low level, O level, right? Which is a junior most. And I got to know that there are not too many job opportunities. There's a lot of saturation in terms of, it's all theoretical work as far as statistics is concerned. And that is when I went into MCA and I got into the IT industry. Okay, and it comes to, round to a circle that down the line, being in e-commerce, I worked I am a Java certified professional 1999. Okay, that is some ancient to you. Actually, one of the first platforms in Java, I was working in New York, and we built actually a trading application when people did not believe in e-commerce. So, and the same cycle, I think I'm coming right now again back to my statistics roots and in this company that I have founded, Kogitari. And, you know, we are getting into another revolution, and this time I think it is AI. I think that is the short introduction to how I got into this.
That's great. And so, I mean, it's really interesting that how the life comes like a full circle, like statistics and then computers, yes. And then now you're into combining both of the things into data science and then using it. That's amazing. And so, again, like you said, so the inspiration or the turning point, what would that be? Would it be the IIT that you had, the 2 weeks at IIT that you mentioned, or something else that drove you behind it as well?
Actually, I also believe in, you know, grabbing the opportunity that comes. Okay. So my first job was with Reliance Industries. Okay. They did not have an IT team then. Right? So I was the initial first people. And I was trained for 6 months on a platform called as Power Builder, which I don't think anybody remembers anymore. But it was like, you know, the most promising platform at that point in programming at that point in time. And one fine day, I got called by my boss, and he was like, I want you to join a new team. So I want you to leave the Power Builder group, and I want you to join this 3-member team. And we've got a professor who's going to work with us. And this team is for internet. Okay, believe me, I had not heard about internet at that point in time. And for me, it was networking. Okay. And to some extent it was, because my first job was T-socket programming and RIA.com firewall. I was very disappointed, right? Because here is everyone launching a Power Builder application, you know, and I have worked on it for 6 months. And when the actual launch is there, I'm getting to this, you know, some R&D team. So that is my second turning point. So when you talk about inspiration, and that is what, you know, I keep telling when people talk to me, and you know, how do you, I think some of it is, you know, the first one was, you know, I was keeping my eyes and ears open. I was networking with people at IIT, I did that, right? And I think that is where groups like Wiz make sense, because you have to know, okay, what is your skill and where's the market going? And then you say, I always like computers, it's not that I can do, kind of, I change it. And the second part was more in terms of where destiny took me. And through that, I was in New York 4 years down the line on Wall Street, trading and writing Java code for an internet application. So in terms of inspiration, I think there are two parts to it. One, always talk to multiple people, right, and take opinions. But finally, it should be your decision. Secondly, anything that you see coming your way, you know, give it your full best. Right. I think that those are like two important things for me in terms of, you know, the guiding principles for my career. Yeah.
Amazing. And along with those guiding principles, have any guiding mentor also? Did you have somebody like that?
Yes. Quite a few, actually. When you talk about mentors, I look at it two levels, right? One, people I personally work with, okay, my boss, my colleague, right, who kind of influenced my thoughts. And then there were some people who were like in my organization, right, or maybe I was not interacting with them directly, but you know, I looked at them from afar and they said, okay, this is where I would like to see myself 10 years down the line. That kind of a thing. So in terms of my mentors, my initial job actually had very interesting and inspiring people, and my boss, especially in New York, Anil Gurnani, I remember it was very difficult for us to get books, and I was working in an area which was very, very new. So he made it a special, you know, right from providing books to guidance, and overall inspiring, and it was, I was in a new country, a new city, right? and I was pretty much alone, right? So I think a lot of mentorship I received at that stage. And the other mentor that I have to mention is my husband. Okay, though we are the same age, we are 1 month apart, but he is in the IT, both of us are in the IT industry. And I think the other kind of mentorship that I see is when I'm taking a decision in my career, right? Or I'm starting something new. As a women tech entrepreneur, I'm like into multiple things. So I think it's always very good to discuss with somebody, get that person's opinion, that person you trust. And I think for me, my husband also is like one of my mentors, right? And I think I do it mutually. I think I'm a mentor for him too. In his career decisions. So I think when you look at mentorship, I think these are the people that I look at.
Yeah, I believe so. The mentorship role, I think that go back and forth between you and your husband.
Yeah. Though I have to add this. Today, things are much different. Okay. We are a much networked community. The opportunities that I do not have today, people have, right? In terms of, you know, you can connect easily to people, you know, who have been there than that, right? And it's much more easier. Like you send a request, I get requests on LinkedIn, you know, people asking me, I want to do this training course or should I get into an analytics role or should I get into a programming role? So I think it's much more easier to find a mentor these days than it was earlier.
Yeah. Even I keep on getting a lot of these requests. People keep on asking me, should I go for analytics? Should I go for coding and things like that? It's sometimes very so, and it's more of a very vague question. So it's very difficult to answer. So how do you answer? I mean, this is slightly off topic, but how do you answer those kind of questions as such when they like when they ask you very broad questions?
Yes. For me. Initially, I typically always send them my email ID, right, and ask them to connect over the phone, right? Yeah. And if they show an interest, okay, then I talk to them. Quite a lot of times, luckily for me, especially from my LinkedIn contacts, there are people whom I know, okay? And I'm also an educator. I'm linked to as an adjunct faculty, right? So a lot of are my students whom I've taught. Maybe I'm not... You know, I don't know them personally that well, but, you know, I kind of know their background on them. Mm-hmm. So, but for mentorship to happen, it cannot happen just with one call. It has to happen over a period of time, right? So, first of all, what do you want to do? Do you want to do analytics course just to augment your, for example, I keep getting a lot of things from MBHR who want to get into analytics. So, my question to them is, do you want to do a course to augment your HR skills, or are you looking at, you know, getting into a complete analytics profile? Because the kind of course you will do in both scenarios will be different. Then they have to get back to me which course they joined, how it was, did it help them, right? And some of them do that, right? So a mentorship is that something which you keep connecting to them at different points in time. And say 6 months down the line, you know where they are going. And then, of course, when they are making a job shift, then again, you're talking to them. Hmm. You get to know what is happening in their personal lives. Right? So, you know, those kind of things really matter when it comes to mentorship scenario. And I think it's very important in today's time to have a good mentor because I think the career paths and the options are too many, right? And the whole ecosystem that we are in is so dynamic and changing so fast that I think it is very, very critical. And I think organizations like Wiz are doing a great job in, you know, getting this leverage to the...
True. I agree. I mean, number of opportunities nowadays is so vast. I mean, I personally sometimes even I used to feel like, what should I do? You know, sometimes that dilemma still is there. No matter how many times people ask you, okay, people look at you, you're fine, but then that dilemma still is there at the back of you. But you're constantly making those choices, and that is why a mentor is really important, you know, to guide us. So which kind of brings me to the next question is, you you told us how you discovered data science, like statistics was your initial stage and then computers. So after that, what really drove you towards data science as such? You know, what really, how did it combine? What was a junction where it both combined, like programming and statistics together?
I think to some extent, I found myself going back to, you know, the basic of statistics, right? And especially my interactions, I think it started off with my interactions with an adjunct faculty, and I started taking up more of the analytics and, you know, in some scenario, even business statistics and, you know, those kind of courses. But actually the turning point came when my husband and I, we have actually, my husband is my co-founder for our company, right? So when we had to get into the startup. So we wanted to combine the domain and the analytics part together. And because of, you know, the exposure that I had in the analytics space, and on his side also he has some exposure, but he has his PhD in, you know, HR. He is from IT industry, so he's a master's in IT, but he's more from HR domain. So that is was the turning point, which actually, you know, got me.
Okay. That's nice. And so, I mean, going to how, for the interested people, like you mentor them, what are the other tips that you give them? Like, how do you explore the certain areas, whatever they choose? Like, suppose somebody chooses data science, like you said, you ask them and how do you proceed? So what other extra tips do you give them? What kind of guidance do you keep on giving them?
Actually, quite a lot of time people have read or, you know, have some certain reasons of why they want to join into a data science course, right? So sometimes it is like they are bored of their existing tech job. Maybe they are into maintenance or mainframe kind of thing. Then there are people who are maybe have done a stats course or a stats bachelor's or a master's, right? But who are trying to, you know, get into machine learning, right? So some of the questions I ask them is like, you know, do you, are you a programming person or are you a numbers person, right? That kind of, you know, because people say data science very broadly, but if you really look at the roles, there is a machine learning engineer, right? More programming and Python skills. And on the analytics side, of course, you have data analytics courses, which is more into statistics and tools related to that. Or the third scenario is, you know, you're a management professional in a certain, say, you know, finance domain. And you suddenly realize that there's a lot of data, and then, you know, you start thinking, should I learn Python or should I learn Tableau? So I think it is more of, you know, asking yourself the question of, what role do you want to play, right? And then look at job descriptions, maybe on LinkedIn, and see what the requisites are for that, right? And that is when you get into course. The next step you come to is, okay, I want to do a data analytics course, but then, you know, should I do it on Coursera or on edX or on Udemy or on Upgrad? You know, I think that is the next level, right? And there is no single answer, right? Because how much time do you want to spend? How much money do you want to spend? And, you know, in your career, how much of time do you want to, you know, spend on data? I think that is, you know, kind of perfect. So there is no simple answer, but I think I gave a thing of, you know, what kind of questions you keep asking yourself in order to get the right answer. So I think the role definition is getting clearer. So data science is not a single role. There are, I think, at least a dozen roles below that umbrella. And the more, and thankfully for us, I think LinkedIn and, you know, Indeed and all these DICE have a lot of these job postings. So I think we need to start looking at the job profiles and the role definitions there, and then figure out really where you want to head.
Okay. So, I mean, this is the on the fly question. Is that when somebody says that they want to be a data scientist or they want to get into data science. So if you were to break down what data science is, how would you do it?
Okay. This is very interesting because, and this may not be very conventional.
That's okay.
I think one, of course, is the statistics part, right? So you have like, you know, inferential statistics and, you know, hypothesis and dealing much with numbers and, you know, all the discipline that statistics has. Then there is an overlap where we get into programming, right? And using a lot of algorithms with, and a lot of platforms too that are there, right? So for machine learning, one thing is you know, learn the machine learning language and you know, get Python or whatever. But apart from that, also look at the existing various platforms that Google and the other companies are getting into. So that is the second one. Third one, I think, which is coming in right now for me, and for me, I would still call it the data scientist, is something like AutoML, right? Where there is a lot of domain-related analysis. Because for me, the way I look at things right now, one of the biggest challenges is the productionizing of AI. Okay, and that is not happening to this extent. And when I say AI, for me, data science is like, you know, the foundation for it. Right? So somewhere, I think whatever analytics skills or whatever data science skills that you have, you can reach only a certain level unless you solve a business problem. Okay? And for you to solve a business problem, you have to work more on the domain side, right? And then maybe you could augment it with something like an AutoML platform, okay? So I think that is the third thing that I see, right? And for me, the fourth on the data science is also about communication. Okay? I think data science scientists need to start communicating to the executive management. Okay? I think that's a big lacuna there. Okay? And nobody really looks at that as a skill. Okay, when you say data scientists, data science, everybody just, you know, jumps directly to the data. But how do you really, you know, and that comes one level above the business problem. Okay, how do you really communicate and, you know, have the asset of data that you have, how do you really communicate with your executive management to create an ROI for them to invest into your data science project? Okay, I think that is lacking. So this communication part is where you need to understand, you know, maybe all of it. At the same time, you have to go to a level where you can communicate it better. So according to me, you know, that is, and I don't think formal roles have been defined at that level, even if you see on LinkedIn. But I think the AutoML and, you know, which in the software engineering paradigm, you typically look at a business analyst, solution architect, right? That kind of a role on a data science platform is where what I see as a gap. And of course, you know, in terms of the communication, which will be more in terms of the executive aspect. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I have my own take because what the conventional pattern is, data science is three parts, data engineering, data, whatever you say. The logic piece of it, the data science piece of it, and then there is visualization. So the engineering logics and the visualization, that's how they usually split it. And your explanation is slightly more beyond that. It's more from the practical perspective of what you face in a daily.
Yeah, more from the implementation perspective, and that is why I said, you know, my view is like maybe a little more abstract, right? So that is why I said that.
Yeah. So then,
But I think it is very much important, because I think one of the challenges, and I have been on a couple of calls recently, and most of the organizations today are facing a challenge where they are not able to productionize. Okay. So there are a lot of AI products, okay, but then there is a roadblock where it is not really seeing the potential which it has the promise of creating. And that is where I think is where most of the organizations are, you know, currently heading to, is how do we really productionize all the data and all the AI technology, such great technology that we have. Even for COVID, we have to talk about that scenario, right? There could be a lot of mobilization, a lot of things that AI could really provide, but I think there's a gap. somewhere in the implementation and things are not really moving at the speed, right? It's not really seeing so much light of the day that it should.
Okay, makes sense. So then, I mean, going forward with this, I mean, obviously, we understand that how it really is in the practical world. So then, how do you manage your daily life, and what exactly does Cogitari do about it, and what does Humans for AI do about it? So, I mean, how do you manage the two things, and what are those? I mean, you can start with what are those, and how do you manage it?
Actually, I should talk a little bit more about my role at Humans for AI. My role at Cogitari is, you know, the traditional role I think all of you can relate. My role at Cogitari, Humans for AI, which is like a non-profit, as I mentioned, is more, you know, to connect and get people from different roles, right? So different professionals. So it could be MBA professionals, it could be teachers, right? All of them to join the community. And we have a lot of my work for Humans for AI happens, you know, with connecting to people, talking to people, you know, setting the strategizing things, right? So, and in terms of the way my day looks like, right? It is 24/7. Okay, but there is no fixed pattern, right? So it is there is a lot of things that keep happening, you know. There's no Saturday or Sunday or anything, or no 9-to-5 thing, which is actually good and bad. Which is good because you know, it gives me a lot of flexibility, especially as a woman, right, to balance my other roles, right? Which yeah. I think most women are able to, because the second thing is I get to do work which I'm passionate about. So, because it's my own company, right? I am my own boss, right? I can face things the way I want, right? And so, it is up to me to decide. Do I have to go at a top speed, or should I go at a pace which I can take, right? So I think that gives me a lot of flexibility in terms of time and in terms of the work that I do. In terms of the cons, it is like, one of the things is there is no night or day or any time, right? It is like, because you are in a global environment, and especially for Cogitari, we work, one of our key areas is virtual teams, right? So, and of course now you're working from home, so it becomes even more difficult, right? So I think there are no boundaries to your work, and I think that really becomes difficult. But what I typically try to do is at any point in time, you know, I try to keep a primary focus. So if it's a client engagement at Cogitari, right? At that point in time, I know that is my focus. So if I'm doing other activities for Humans for AI or some adjunct activities, or, you know, doing interview calls, or, you know, visiting any events, right? Which is also part of things that I am involved in. So I try to, you know, put that on the back burner or keep it less focused. And then I try to, you know, there are times when I'm working on an initiative for Humans for AI, right? So at that point in time, my work at Cogitari actually slows down a little bit. So I think balance is the key. And that also goes, okay, there is some emergency on the home front, right? As women, we are looked upon as caregivers. So there are responsibilities that you want to look at on your personal front also. I think balance is like the key mantra, right? And then you have to keep, changing the bars of your focus based on that.
Right. And with this, is my audio proper?
Yeah, that's okay. I can hear you.
Okay. So that is, with Cogitari, I mean, it's like you said, more of cognitive piece of work. So what do you really say cognitive AI, what does it really mean to you, and what is the kind of work that you're doing? What was the most interesting project that you've ever worked on?
As I said, Cogitari is what we founded and it is more in the HR and AI domain. And our focus, actually, we started off with emotional intelligence and artificial intelligence. And if you look at the terminology there, and there is slight overlap, the terminology used for especially emotion recognition and emotion development, that is typically called as effective computing. Right? And that is one area that we are working on and we continue to work on. Okay, but at the same time, because of our consulting work in HR and technology areas, right, we got into more broader areas, and that is where cognitive in terms of a terminology, right? I mean, that it is used in terms of computing, but in terms of services and things like that, it is more in terms of thinking, or you know, a term that is used even in terms of psychology, engagements that you do in terms of, you know, analyzing language patterns or personalities and things like that. So from that perspective is where the cognitive services offerings that, you know, we talk about. So interesting projects, if you talk about in the HR domain, right, we have been trying to do engagements. There we have done culture engagements, organization culture engagement, where we look at organization network analysis for communication patterns across the virtual teams. Okay, so, and based on that, you identify. So it's more of augmenting of, you know, the HR work that we do with that. The other thing what we've tried is doing profiling in terms of financial, you know, chatbot activities, right? More in terms of conversational forms. In terms of the actual research work where we are publishing papers, that is slightly a different and more interesting field. It focuses on emotions and it focuses on channels. Okay, so what kind of channels you use and what emotions does it generate? Okay, and we have tried to study that in a leadership profile. So as a leader, if you are generating trust and if you are doing it over a chatbot, something on that line. So we have three papers till now which are published. In. That is like a pure research kind of area. Okay, and if you have to ask me in terms of my interesting projects, I think the ONA and profiling, I think both which I already mentioned, and I always find working with sentiment analysis also very interesting, because it's become very popular now, right? So I think these are some of the areas, I think, which maybe because of the challenges we had because of the virtual team, I think those are the
interesting. Okay. So only do you like to work on text sentiment analysis, or do you also do some sort of visual emotion detection as well?
We haven't worked as yet on any emotion recognition platforms as such, but I think given the client engagement, we will actually partner or, you know, take tools, right? And I think we already have companies, even in Mumbai, we have I forget the name, I think Endotrick Technologies. Effectiva is supposed to be a very famous platform. Okay, they are the leaders in emotion AI. So I don't think we will be on that. Do activities around that. But I think the biggest challenge with emotion recognition, especially, can you hear me? I think.
Yes, I can.
You want me to repeat the last one?
Yes, yes. I mean, I'm not sure how the internet is playing out.
Okay, right. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, I think we might have to just go on the written script. But anyways. So, yeah. So, I think using face recognition and, you know, I think there are a lot of concerns even in the privacy perspective and all that. So, you know, even though it is like a great tech and, you know, very interesting use cases, I think finding the right application for it, right, to use it in the real life becomes challenging from a practical perspective because of all the privacy issues. Now, if you see, Effectiva is actually using that in transportation and in cars. So the product that they have for emotion detection is actually put on your dashboard, like, you know, on your card dashboard, and if you are sleepy or if you're not attentive, it gives you an alert, right? So that is like a safe use case to have, as against putting it on CCTV camera and, you know, monitoring the classroom, right? Which is, you know, has its own concerns in terms of privacy and all that. So I think in terms of technology, there is a lot of technology for emotion detection that is already there. I mean, even in terms of, you know, I think a lot of emotion databases available if you want to build your own platform. Okay, but I think finding the right use cases, you know, which are ethically right with the right privacy settings, I think, you know, that, I mean, apart from tech, this whole thing about, you know, surrounding any kind of application or implementation of a technology, you know, that for emotion AI, basically it's still going there, not reach there.
Okay. And going forward, this space of technology, I mean, what is the tech community through a woman's lens, and what would be the you know, the tips or the tech, you know, some sort of advice that you would like to give to aspiring women, you know, technologists or data scientists who are planning to take this up or who are already existing, I mean, through your experience?
I think one big advice I have for everybody is, you know, keep going, right? I think one of my favorite things is, for men, their career is a linear progression, like it's a linear graph, right? For women, it is more of logistic, right? So it typically has a break or a lag, right? And quite a lot of times, they don't commit to come back, okay? So either it's marriage or it's kids, or, you know, as I said, because you looked at caregivers, someone in the family is not well, and then you take a break. And quite a lot of times, it's very difficult to get lost, especially in an industry like ours, right, where things keep changing very fast. So, but I think even if you are on a break for some reason, or, you know, for some reason you cannot, you know, work or focus on your career at the full potential that you would have, you know, planned to, I think, you know, just keep going, right, and always keep learning new things. So that you don't feel alien to make a comeback. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we focus on for AI, when I talk about, you know, diversity, and apart from, you know, getting people from different professions, it's also gender diversity. Because it's more difficult for women to come in. And if you look at Indian context especially, I think for people, for women, education, you know, is comparatively much better than it used to be. Okay? But after education, right, when they get into a job, and most of the jobs are pretty demanding, it is very easy for them to, you know, just fall off the roof and then, you know, not make a comeback. Right? And down the line, when, you know, your kids have grown up, and then you have that emptiness, right, and then you have nothing, and then you wish that you had kept going, right? So I think keep going. Maybe, you know, there will be highs and lows, but if you, you know, don't give up. So when you ask me, one of the things that I also do is, you know, talk to people, you know, ask them to start a second day list, right? Especially people who are on break. And, you know, I said, like, why don't you join this course? Why don't you read this? You know, and then why don't you look at this kind of a role? Because I think, and there is more flexibility today, right, than there used to be. So I think that is, you know, one thing that I would really like to do. And, you know, keep learning. I think even I believe I'm a constant learner. Even right now, I'm doing a UC Berkeley course on leadership for the new world. I think at any point in time, you have to keep learning. I mean, today's world is, and so even if you're on a break, you still keep learning something, right? You keep a goal for yourself, or if at your workplace, if you have taken, you know, some, maybe you have some other priorities, but you're not able to, you know, spend like 10 hours or 12 hours at work. But even then, you know, keep going and keep learning something.
Okay, great. So I think the lesson you learn from your story is basically just keep learning, or there's something more to it?
Keep learning, and I think don't give up, right? So I think keep learning new things, keep exploring new things. In fact, my tagline, if you follow me on Twitter, is I'm a technologist, educator, and an explorer, right? So I think trying new things and new stuff, right? New career roles, right? Because things around you are changing. So if you say, okay, this is what I used to do 5 years ago, this is what I'm good at, you know, that does not make sense. You have to like keep learning and keep doing new things. So I think keep going, right? Whatever happens, right? And keep learning new things. Yeah.
Okay. And then brings me to the top five, you know, the exciting things about the AI industry and the top five most concerning things about the AI industry, according to you. And, you know, why do you think so that is right? Or you could just keep it less than five as well.
Yeah, I try to think about top, I don't have to be 5 or 3 or... One thing is, I think AI is promise for healthcare. Okay? I think it has huge potential, especially when you look at, you know, image processing and, you know, all those areas. And I think it's not leveraged, right? One of the reasons I think is because we don't have enough domain professionals from healthcare, right? Even the current COVID-19 scenario, right? I don't think we have enough domain professionals to identify the business problem. That is one. Second thing, I think if you say promise, I think NLP and its promise for, especially for India, okay, for the languages, right, that we have, I think it is huge, right? Because the same way that you had smartphones when, you know, especially Reliance came in and then you got Jio and everybody could get a smartphone, if we could leverage NLP and languages, translation, you know, communication in the regional languages in India, and you know, we could get it to reach to a you know, bigger audience. I think the potential is huge. I remember a time where, you know, people said e-commerce has no promise at all, right? Especially in India. In fact, I think I have a paper authored, co-authored, which says apparel in India. This is authored, I don't know, in some 2000 where. Apparel has no promise, especially for the Indian audience. That is some kind of a side assignment that I have done. But we see today that, you know, e-commerce is thriving, especially now with this new scenario, of course, it is thriving. Right? Something like that, I think NLP holds a huge promise, right? Especially for India, where we have, so I think those two. And the third one is, I think, agriculture. So I don't know enough use cases personally because that is not my domain. But I think in terms of the power it has in terms of the AI for social good, and I know there are some initiatives at the government level also, and there are organizations which are working in this space. So I think at an agriculture and especially with image processing and, you know, things like that, I think that is where I think there is a huge promise in terms of. And in terms of my fear for AI, and this will be like, you know, something very different, I fear it will be a technology which will not be utilized. Okay, it will just be, you know, in the tech bubble, right? And another 5 year or a decade, then we'll say, oh, Power Builder was so great, you know. And, you know, that fear, or maybe it will be there in very few pockets. Because if it does not reach the business community, if it does not, it is not embraced by the domain experts, it will really not reach its potential. And I think it will be a great technology, which will be, you know, confined to a few Google or Tesla, you know, these three companies that are there, right? Or Amazon, right? So I think Microsoft, right? 4 or 5 companies, right? So they will have those products which they will, you know, and we will be using it more at a smartphone level and not really at a business application level, right? Which is the potential that it has to be. So this is just the tech products that we will use.
Yeah, yeah, I see. And I don't know, it's, you're the most candidate.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that, but I think there's a lot of things happening. So I think that fear is maybe not justified, say, because I see a lot of interesting work happening towards that direction, and but we have a long way to go. So and that's
true. True. Yeah, even I think that could be a bubble, maybe. But I don't know. It's just I've seen some of those Gartner's charts. They've shown some cases where, you know, it's whether it's about to reach a peak or it's not about to reach a peak, and
but that's what Gartner is. Gartner is a technology, or their focus is more on technology products, right? So that's what I'm saying, right? So it is, and yes, I mean, I agree there is this huge potential for it, right? I think it is, it needs to be embraced much faster than, you know, I think the embracing or the diffusion or the acceptance is going to be much faster than it.
So and then how do you think, obviously you might fear, or you said something that AI in healthcare has a good chance of, you know, it really excites you a lot. So how do you think it can help us with the COVID pandemic throughout, you know, right now that's happening?
There are quite a few companies doing very interesting things around, you know, the AI implementation for COVID. I mean, other than just, you know, looking at the data and predicting the numbers, which is, I think, one part of it. The other ones, I think, which we have already heard about is Wokart using, automated detection or screening, right? So I think the robot is self-made in India. The other, in terms of thermal imaging, I think detecting if people have fever, right, which goes on the scanning that they do of the thermal imaging that they have. I think that is also very interesting. And just purely on the analytics front, I think if we just focus on certain strata of data, like, you know, maybe the Mumbai data, I think we will find more patterns and more answers, right, rather than looking at, you know, a world metric, right? So I think localized data, right? And one thing is, I don't really know how much of, I mean, rather than just the people infected and all that, right, how much of the patient history, or, you know, what kind of symptoms, or, you know, so how much of patient data is really collected and how much of it is, you know, transparent across, right? I think that really will drive of how much of predictive things that we can do with COVID.
All right, great. And then what strategies do you or your company, you know, use to stay afloat during this pandemic that's happened? How do you really manage your business? How do you manage your personal life throughout this? How have you been doing it?
It's been a challenging time, I think, for everybody, right? And just, you know, the whole environment around you and being in a confined kind of a scenario. And but what I think is, mentally we need to be prepared.
Yes. So I was asking the question that is that how have you as a company and as an individual been able to stay afloat and manage, you know, during this pandemic? That is what I wanted to understand.
Yes. One thing is, you know, I think mentally you need to prepare that, you know, this is like this before COVID, and with COVID, right? I don't think it's something that's going to go off very soon, right? So, and at such times as this, I think I look at inspiration of, you know, people, you know, who have been in worse scenarios. For example, one of my inspiration is Nelson Mandela. And, you know, he was actually in a prison for, I think, 27 years, and he came back and inspired our country. Here we have to just be confined to a home. So I think, I don't think, you know, that is that challenging. So I think that is the way I look at it. So I think it's important, you know, to make a story or keep a story, because this is going to be looking back. People are going to be looking back in history at, you know, how we did pass through this time. So I think we have to leave back an inspiring story, which, you know, you can narrate to your grandchildren, maybe, right? So I think that is one of the mental makeup. I think that is very important. Second thing, I think, is the most important thing right now is your health, right? Everything else is, you know, something that you can make up to later, right? This is just a passing phase. And I think that is the most important thing. The third thing is, I think being in the IT industry, we are luckier, right? Because the kind of work that I am in, I can keep doing it, maybe to not the fullest extent, but to a great extent, you know, with the online resources, with the kind of research that I'm doing, you know, I'm, you know, able to sustain the downtime, right? There is not much downtime as compared maybe to the other industries. So I think right now the message for me, which I would like people is, you know, let this time just pass, right? And then I think the bigger war is in your mind, right? And how you keep yourself focused and positive during this time, you know, because this is just a passing phase. And just one mantra, be healthy.
Especially everything else will follow. Not just
especially
physical health, both mental and emotional as well, along with it, yeah.
I think that is very important.
And then, which brings me to the next question is, obviously post this pandemic, again, data science is what it is, and obviously we've seen some traction, good traction. So how do you think in the coming decade or so, India should be, you know, using data science? What do you think we should focus on as a country? Which areas do we really think we should focus on?
Of course, the corporate sectors, like, you know, in the corporate sectors, I think finance and marketing industries, you know, are much more agile in terms of adoption, right? And they are much more open to technology change. Right? So if you look at a lot of other industries, you know, they are like elephants, right? They take time to move. Whereas if you're looking at early adopters, and that is where I look at a lot of, you know, because no data science project will happen unless you capture the right data. Right? It starts from there. So the acceptance and agility, I think that finance industry, you know, provides, the marketing industry provides, is, you know, very much important. And marketing to a certain extent, because they are impacted greatly, right? And then they're forced to be agile in some way. So I think finance, marketing are two domains that I think are very, you know, promising. If you ask me, the wish list, it is healthcare. Okay? And there's so much potential. But, you know, they are an elephant, right? Or maybe not an elephant, but it's very difficult to get things done, especially in the Indian context. The other thing I would think is, on the retail, on the e-commerce front, I think second tier or three tier, and as I said, the natural NLP and using the various languages, right? I think that sector and the kind of things that we can do, you know, in terms of e-commerce as an extension of e-commerce, right? I think those are also very promising areas. In terms of India specifically, I think if the government steps in, I think there's huge things, huge potentials we can do, potential in terms of, you know, things like traffic management and agriculture. These two are our main areas, right? And I know government is showing interest, like NITI does have, you know, NITI Aayog has an AI charter, right? right, and very focused areas. But it is, the way I look at it is, it's still on paper or at a very abstract level. We need more of industry-government linkage. We need more consortiums, you know, which come together in the finance technology domain, right? So finance AI or marketing-driven AI, right? We need more consortiums to actually get things up the ground. So if you ask me, if I could choose, like, you know, this would be like the top four industries, I would.
Yeah, and then, like, you would effectively begin writing to the data capture side of things, and then yes, onto the analysis, and then the implementation.
Yes.
Yes. Right.
Data capture is one of the biggest challenges right now, and that is one of the reasons that, you know, we are not able to reach the potential. And see, one of the other things which has come out also in the study is people don't trust. Yeah, right. So, and I think the trust factor also comes that people don't trust the data. Right? So, and it could be that the capture mechanism, the process itself, the tools for capture itself, we have to start from there rather than look at, you know, just the analytics part of it. And at an enterprise level, I think if we start off with building more trust on your data, the other things will naturally flow. And it has to start at the apex. So if you remember the communication piece that I talked about, right? So you have to have a chief data officer. So that has to be a role in your organization chart if you want to leverage your data. And that person should know the data of your organization, like, you know, in and out, and how you can use. Okay, I have this problem. No sales, no revenue generation. Which data piece from my enterprise I use? I have an employee attrition data. Which data piece should I use? So I think we should formally start defining CDO roles, right? And that is where that connect will happen, especially in maybe finance or conglomerates, you know, all those kind of industries. I think they really need a formal chief data officer. Right?
I see. So, and then, even I understand that there's really a lot of scope in this, and then we still have a long way to go about it. It's just that getting people also too familiar with the whole ecosystem is a really key part of the process.
Yes, and I think we will evolve. Okay. For example, I told you I started off with HTML programming by hand, like, you know, type open close HTML bracket.
Yes. Okay?
And I think it was 95-96, that kind of thing. Okay? And right now, who is really, we've gone up the value chain, who is really designing web pages? It is more from brand, it's marketing professionals, and it's just drag and drop. Data science is going to find a similar, curve of extraction. You see, like, products like Data Robot and things like that, they are already, of course, there's going to be a limitation to, you know, what kind of things you can do. But I think in terms of maturity, in terms of application, there is going to be an evolution that happens, right? And I think that will be very important for the survival of, this
technology. So just out of curiosity, that what after data science, what are the technology you think will be like the most trending technology out of data science?
Data science. I don't know if it's trending or not, but I think in terms of exciting, if I want to say it, I think space tourism. I know you're not expecting that. But I would have said IoT and things like, but I think those are all, you know, somewhere there, and data science is going to be there for a long time. I don't think it's going to build upon it. Maybe it will not be as exciting as it is right now, but it is going to stay. I think it's going to go, but whether it reaches its potential or not, I don't know. But I think, yeah, something related to space, space tourism, and transportation, I think that is going to be really exciting.
Okay.
As for me, right? For example, Uber has flying cars. They did a demo in January, I think the Consumer Electronics Show, they actually showed a prototype demo of flying taxis, Uber flying taxis, right? So, of course, there's going to be a lot of data science engineers that you will need there, right? So, in fact, there will be more traffic control that is done, right? That is done right now. So, it's just going to be a different role that evolves. But if you ask me, I think in terms of excitement, I think that is one area, transportation and space travel is something that I think is going to be that the next exciting thing left down the line.
Yeah. And then, you had a lot of success throughout your work. And could you just share like one story which like touched your heart, or one thing that you felt as if, you know, yes, my work made a difference to somebody or to someone's life? Could you share some example of that?
I don't know if it's exactly the answer to your question, but one of the reasons I started this nonprofit, is my daughter is now, she's 16. Time in fifth or sixth grade, and then she came back and one day from school, and she told me that how can you work on artificial intelligence and robots? It's going to be bad for my future. Me and my friends are not going to have jobs, right? And that is when the first time it hit me that AI is always shown in the negative light, right? Thanks to Hollywood and even some movies that Bollywood, I guess, right? And that is when I started writing about artificial intelligence and being an AI advocacy, right? And at Humans for AI, we want to reach 1 million people, right, by the year 2025. So somewhere, I think my work for Humans for AI is where I think I'm touching a lot of lives, and trying to explain it to people who really see AI as something bad. I think that is the first thing where I, and then go to the next level and educate them to, you know, this is what it means and this is how it can help you, right? So I think my work as a non-profit in that area, as a volunteer with Humans for AI, is something I think is making a big difference, or at least it's satisfying to me.
Yeah, I've seen that have been published by you.
Yes, and going forward, we want to get into areas where we get into ethics and, you know, company policies around ethics, right? So there should be charters, product charters, which are like as common as, you know, maybe guidelines you have for open source, right? So we should have something in AI space where everybody in the world is using something like that, right? Because I think at the back of the mind, there is this fear of, you know, artificial general intelligence coming in, and the rate at which research is going on, right, that fear always stays. So I think that is also equally important, right? So to have ethical policies and rules around what you will do.
Yeah, and I think doing something on those lines, I'm not wrong. I think, I'm not sure.
For Humans for AI, you mean? I'm sorry, my dog is.
Open AI. So I think Open AI is.
Okay, Open AI is a consortium. Yeah, it was a non-profit. Okay, started by Elon Musk. Okay, so I think Open AI is actually something where it was to be a non-profit, but I think now it is under impact. Okay, so they actually are building up something similar to an open source repository, like an Apache or something, but in the AI space.
Yeah, like a charter, like open source foundation, but they're more on the technical side of things.
Yes. So they are building products where a group of people come together and, you know, trying to build products.
Yeah. And then before we close down, for this amazing session that we've had, I just wanted to know, what is one life lesson quote that you follow, and then how have, you know, and if you can just story and just some relevance that you can draw from your life, that one quote or that few set of.
Okay. Did you say life quote? You said life quote. No, I'm sure. Okay. My favorite quote, currently, I think with the COVID crisis, I think the quote that I have on my table is in the dark, look for stars. Okay, but I think that is the current quote I have. But in general, if you look at the motto that. Or the thing that I was saying, I think change is the only constant, you know, which is like one of my favorite quotes. Okay, because I think as a human being, right? You have to keep changing and evolving. Okay? And I think that is what is most important, not just from your career perspective, but also as an individual and as a person. And I think having a purpose in life and, you know, moving towards that purpose, right? I think the biggest challenge is, first of all, finding your purpose, right? And then moving towards it. So I think that is very important. So I think for me, one of the most important quote that I look upon is, you know, change is the only constant, right? And then you keep changing and you keep adapting yourself to the change. And that is how you grow.
Again, one more out of curiosity. So you said finding the life purpose and following it. So yes. How did you find your purpose, or what tips would you give to people to finding their purpose, and, you know, how do you obtaining that?
Okay. I'm reading a book called as Ikigai. I don't know if you've heard about Ikigai. Ikigai is, it is a Japanese, and to tell you, I am not really sure I completely found my purpose, right? So I've been searching for a long time. But I know one thing, that I have found things which make me much more happier than, you know, I would have maybe 10 years ago, right? So I think there are things that are, you know, giving me more happiness and taking me towards my purpose, right? And I think at the end, I think there will be some part of destiny which will take me there. So my work with Humans for AI, okay? I always wanted to start a school. Okay? My grandmother actually in the 1950s started a school for girls, okay? And she was always one of my inspirations. Maybe I should have named her when you asked me. But yeah, my grandmother was my inspiration and she started a school. Have I lost your name?
Sorry?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So as I was saying, I think I'm still on the journey to find my purpose. Okay, but I think I have found ways or activities that I do which give me a lot of joy, right? And I want to move in that direction. Hopefully, destiny will, you know, take me to my purpose. And one of them, which started off was stemmed with my grandmother. Okay, and she started a school in the 1950s for girls. And she was always an icon for me. So my initial thought was always I wanted to get into education, teach people, right? But then I realized that, you know, teaching younger kids and all was not, you know, my cup of tea, right? And handling kids. And then I realized I was more of a technologist, right? And when this Humans for AI idea came in, I'm one of the founding members, right? And taking AI literacy to the world in a very different kind of way. That, I think, somewhere, you know, kind of gelled with me so well. So right now, when I'm working for anything on Humans for AI, I just don't realize how much time I've spent, right? I'm volunteering with them, right? So I think somewhere, and that is, I actually joined Humans for AI. My contributions initially was more in terms of writing. So I was propagating AI advocacy, and that was a very, very limited role. Okay? And that was around 3 years ago, right? And down the line, when India chapter came, me and Veena Amarnathan, who was the CEO, she was like, would you like to read the India chapter, right? So things have been growing. And now in India, we are like a growing community. And then we are having new concepts. We're trying to build a community on Mighty Networks. We have something called as learning communities, where we're doing open source projects. Okay? So it is actually growing to a very different level. And so I think I'm moving towards my purpose. And I think the mantra for me would be, okay, whatever gives me joy, that is one step towards it, versus something that I'm really doing, which, you know, I'm really hating, but I have to do it because it's my duty. You know, then you want to do it till it's your duty, but then later on you don't want to do it.
Great. That's an amazing mantra to live by. So, and obviously with this, we come to our close of our session. It's been an amazing session. So if somebody wants to find you online, what is the, where can they find you?
I'm most active on LinkedIn, right? So I think LinkedIn is the platform that they can reach out to me very easily.
Okay.
And then, of course, we can connect.
You, so you
I have to mention, because After my talk at WIDS Mumbai, I think it happened like 2 years ago. Immediately after the talk, I think 2 or 3 people did connect to me, right? And one of them I'm still in touch with, in fact, just last month. She did a course on from NPTEL, which is IIT Mumbai's online course.
Yes.
And I knew that she did a data analytics course, and then, you know, I wanted feedback because somebody else wanted to do it. So, you know, I remember her LinkedIn communication started after the WIDS Mumbai meet, right? So I think LinkedIn is the best way to.
Okay. Okay. It's like life coming to a full circle.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, ma'am. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. And it was really a great learning experience with having, you know, your thoughts behind AI and how you've started all from ground zero. So it was really amazing session. Thank you for having, you know, thank you for joining us on this.
Yeah. Thank you, Rakul. And thank you to the WIDS Mumbai team, right, for giving me this opportunity. And wishing you all the best.
Oh, ma'am. Thank you so much. Keep in touch.